Welcome to The Word for Today, the broadcast ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with the life and death of Josiah as we pick up in 2 Chronicles, chapter 35, verse 20. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
After Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, the king of Egypt, came up to fight against Carchemish by Euphrates, and Josiah went out against him. Now, the Babylonians have been fighting with the Assyrians. It had been an ongoing war between these two nations, and the Babylonians were now beginning to gain the ascendancy over the Assyrians. The Assyrians had lost their capital of Nineveh, and Carchemish was even taken by Babylon. Necho was taking his troops up to Carchemish in order to retake it, which he did. He retook Carchemish from the Babylonians. However, a couple of years later, Nebuchadnezzar came with the Babylonian army, and the great battle of Carchemish, when the back of Egypt was broken, Carchemish was retaken by Nebuchadnezzar, and Egypt was defeated, which ushered in the world dominance of the nation of Babylon. So this is that period of history that we're looking at right now. Necho feels called of God to go up and to aid the Assyrians against Babylon. Now, for some reason, Josiah decides to oppose Pharaoh Necho. Josiah decided to get involved in this stopping of Egypt. And so Josiah, it says, went out against him. But Pharaoh Necho, sent ambassadors to him that said, "What have I to do with you, thou king of Judah? I am not coming against you this day, but against the house wherewith I have war. My grievance isn't with you, it's with Babylon. For God commanded me to make haste. So don't stand in my way, don't slow me down. I'm under the commands of God. Forbear from meddling with God, who is with me, that he destroy you not." It is quite possible that Josiah felt, what does he know about God? What does he know about the word of God or the will of God? He is a pagan Egyptian king. And thus Josiah persisted upon getting involved in this battle. Again, we don't know, because the Bible doesn't tell us, what the motivations of Josiah were. Why does he want to meddle? It is an attack against Judah. Actually, it's an attack against Babylon, which ultimately destroyed Judah. And why he would want to get involved is something that we can only speculate. But even after this warning from Pharaoh Necho, this warning to stay out of this, this isn't between you and me, so don't stand in my way, for you shouldn't meddle with God, or he will destroy you. And so here is this king of Egypt warning this righteous king Josiah against meddling with God and with the plan of God and with the purpose of God. Josiah had been a faithful servant of God and an instrument that God used for the salvation of the nation for 31 years. It is possible that he thought at this point he could do no wrong. It could be that he was incensed and insulted that a pagan king would try to instruct him about God and the things of God. There is a danger, an inherent danger of being an instrument that God has used for his purposes. And that danger is getting an exalted opinion of yourself. I am really somebody. God chose me for this great work. And I am necessary for the work of God. And that if I am not in this place, God's work will go down the tubes. If the work has been built upon the personality of any man, it ought to go down the tubes. And the sooner the better. But we begin to get inflated opinions of ourselves because God has used us. And people often aid and abet that inflated ego. You know, what a blessing you are to them and how wonderful you are in these things. And it can destroy the servants of God. Paul said, don't let a man think more highly of himself than he ought. There is a danger in that. And then Paul asked, what do you have but what you received? And if you received it of the Lord, then why do you boast as though you didn't receive it from the Lord, but there's something in you? It is true that God does gift men. And God uses then these gifted men. But the gifts came from God. And you need to constantly recognize that. Always recognized as such. So that the instrument is not exalted or lifted up. Because the moment the instrument begins to be lifted up and begins to think, well, God really needs me. And God's work requires that I be here. And if I weren't here, you know, the whole thing could cave and all this. Oh, what a lie and deception. And Josiah, having been used of God for such a period of time, probably felt that I can do what I please now. My life is anointed. And so he did not listen to the warning of Pharaoh Necho. And in spite of the warning, he meddled with the plan of God. He tried to hinder the plan of God. Pharaoh Necho said, God told me to make haste. He tried to stand in the way and slow him down. And he tried to stand in the way of the work that God was seeking to do. Oh, God, help that man who stands in the way of the work that God is seeking to do. And so he went out. Verse 22, nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from the battle, from Necho. But he disguised himself that he might fight with him. He hearkened not unto the words of Necho that had come from the mouth of God, and he came to fight in the valley of Megiddo. So not hearkening to the warnings, the word that came from God, he's going to go out there and he's going to stand or seek to stand in the path of God. And so the archers shot at King Josiah. And the king said to his servants, get me out of here, for I am gravely wounded. The course of history is changed by the hard-headedness of this king. It is interesting, once he gets involved, the moment trouble comes, he says, get me out of here. But he wouldn't listen beforehand. It's not until he's been shot, it's not until he's been gravely wounded that he is willing then to listen to what God says. Oh, God, help us, that God doesn't have to hurt us or wound us in order to get us to listen. I think of Jacob, headstrong guy. And God had to finally cripple Jacob to get him to listen. Jacob had all kinds of problems, but Jacob was so self-resourceful and reliant. I mean, this guy was clever. He could get the best of any deal. He learned to rest upon his own resources, taking the blessing of his brothers by his clever maneuvering, taking from his uncle Laban the greater portion of the stronger cattle and herd, his two daughters, their servants. And though Laban tried to outwit him and changed his wages 10 times, Jacob came out on top every time. He was that kind of resourceful guy. But now he's facing some real problems. He has just left his uncle Laban, who has put a mark on the ground, and said, "Don't you come over this mark, or you've had it, man. You know, there's no place to return back here." And Laban takes off with his men, and it's been tense. And then word comes to him, "Your brother Esau is coming to meet you. He's got 200 armed men with him." But Jacob realized that it's not the kind of a welcome that he wanted. The last time he saw his brother, he said, "I'm going to kill you. As soon as Dad dies, man, you're dead." And now, here comes his brother with 200 men. But, oh, clever, resourceful Jacob. He sets his servants in groups. He says, "Here, you take 200 sheep and you go out in front. And when you meet Esau with the men, and they say, 'Who are you and who are these sheep?'" These are a present for Esau from his brother Jacob. And he sent all these guys out in front with these cattle and camels and everything else, and all presents for Esau from his servant Jacob, you know, to appease him. And then he divided the family into two companies. And in case they attack one, the others can flee. I mean, got the whole thing all worked out, you know. If we can't appease him with all the gifts, then one will, you know, have a holding action while the others escape. And still scheming, conniving. And so he sets his family down and says, "Okay, you guys sleep here." And now he goes across the little Jabbok and he prays. And he says, "Now, Lord, you're the one that told me to come back home, and you do me good. Now, I'm not worthy the least of your mercies that you have shown unto me. When I crossed this little Jabbok running from my brother, all I had was my cane. And now look, man, I've got so many I had to divide into two companies. But Lord, I'm worried about this guy Esau." And there came the angel of the Lord and wrestled with Jacob all night. Now here he is, a 96-year-old, tougher than nails. What you don't need when facing the crisis is to be up all night, and especially to be wrestling. It takes a lot of energy. And as the morning began to break, and Jacob still wouldn't give up, still wouldn't surrender, the angel of the Lord touched his hip and threw it out of joint. And when Jacob saw that he was crippled and could not run, he then began to cry. And he said, "Oh Lord, I won't let you go until you bless me." And he said, "What is your name?" "Yaakov." The name means heel catcher. He said, "Your name will no longer be heel catcher, Yaakov, but your name will be Israel, a man of God, or a man governed by God." That was the blessing that God gave to him, the change of nature. No longer the clever, conniving schemer, but now a man governed by God. Oh, how important that our lives be governed by God. Josiah would not listen. He insisted on getting involved. It was not until he was wounded that he was willing to surrender. It was not until Jacob was wounded that he was willing to surrender. He was still doing his best, conniving, scheming, until God finally had to cripple him in order to bring him to the place of submission. But I would suggest that that's not good. That it's better that we submit unto God before we are crippled. That we be more obedient and yielded to the things of God so that God doesn't have to cripple us in order to get us in alignment with what he wants. Here's Josiah, sorely wounded. He says, get me out of here. Well, God was saying, stay out of there to begin with. But he pushed on headstrong until he was wounded. Just like so many people I know today. God says, stay out of there. You have no business being there. And they go anyhow. And God has to let them suffer then the consequences of getting involved in things where you have no business being. My son confessed to me the other night something that I had not known, and probably good that I didn't. When he was in a period of life where he was running from God, a friend of his was involved in a pool shooting contest at a bar and had encouraged Jeff to come down and join the contest and was there in the bar with his friend shooting pool. He had been eliminated, but his friend was going on in the contest, a good pool player. And three seedy characters came into the bar, began to push their way around and cause trouble, and so the patrons in the bar beat up on these three guys who were ejected from the bar, but they came back in about an hour with guns and began to shoot the place up. My son was there. And he said by the time the third shot was fired, he was halfway down the block. He said he never moved so fast in all of his life. He said, oh God, I don't want to die in a bar. A lot of times when we insist on being where God says we shouldn't be, we can find ourselves in deep water. Josiah was where he shouldn't be. He found himself in deep water. He wasn't willing to listen until God had to actually let him be injured, gravely injured. And then he orders the charioteers, get me out of here. I've been wounded. And his servants therefore took him out of that chariot and put him in the second chariot, one that was built for speed. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died. The indication is, according to history in the text, is that he died from some of the other prophets. He died on the way to Jerusalem. And he was buried in one of the sepulchres of his fathers, and all of Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. He had been a good king. He had been a good leader. He had brought the nation back to God, back to strength. And Jeremiah, the prophet of God, lamented for Josiah. And all of the singing men and the singing women spake of Josiah in their lamentations. To this day they made an ordinance in Israel, and behold, they are written in the Lamentations. Now that is not, of course, the lamentation of Jeremiah, because that lamentation was against Jerusalem. It was the lamenting over Jerusalem because of the destruction by the Babylonians. That Jeremiah sat there in the grotto across from the Herod's gate, looking at the devastated city, looking at the temple that had been destroyed. And he sat there weeping and lamenting over Jerusalem. It didn't have to be. It didn't have to be in such a mess. It didn't have to be destroyed. But the people would not listen or hearken to God, and they brought the judgment of God upon themselves in Jeremiah's lamentation. But here was the separate lamentations. These are for Josiah. Now the rest of the acts of Josiah, his goodness, according to that which was written in the law of the Lord, and his deeds, both the first and the last, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel and of Judah. 2 Kings chapter 22. In that area, you'll find also the story of Josiah, and we'll also come to him when we come to Jeremiah. We will get into the man Josiah again.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of 2 Chronicles in our next lesson, as we continue with the fall of Jerusalem. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Chronicles. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
A lot for us to learn. Important lessons to take to heart. God help us to do it. God help us to learn the lesson of listening to the Lord. Not to think of ourselves ever as above the law of God. Because we've been used of God or whatever, not to think that we're exempt from the law of God. And not to go where God has not called us, and especially not to go where God says we shouldn't be. Help us to learn, O Lord, to serve you with all of our heart and with all of our soul, not just because it's the popular thing to do or it's, you know, everybody's going, I like to be with the crowd, but we serve the Lord with all of our hearts, and that we serve him out of a heart of love. Not from constraint, not from pressure, but the love of Christ constraining me, pushing me.
Have you ever thought about this simple phrase, God loves you? This just might be the most important truth you could ever grasp, that God has called you into a loving relationship with himself. Unfortunately, many of us have been brought up to think that we need to earn God's love. In Chuck Smith's book, Why Grace Changes Everything, Pastor Chuck imparts years of wisdom from his own experiences, how he thought he had to work hard and deny his own desires for God to love him. But when he unlocked the secret to God's grace, this changed everything. Come alongside Pastor Chuck to discover an astonishing truth about your relationship with Jesus Christ, that it's not based upon your works, but based upon God's love for you. It's true. Grace changes everything. To find out more and to read a preview, visit thewordfortoday.org and click on the link to download Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. Or if you would like to order this book in print, call The Word for Today at 800-272-9673.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.